Good afternoon. Thank you, Ralph. I appreciate that. I know Ralph's awake. Everybody else may be asleep. Did I wake you up, Ralph? All right. Okay, last week I gave I said it was a two-part sermon. And it was on the four seasons of a Christian. And wanted to finish that today. I didn't get as far along last week as I should have, but I'll be able to finish easily this week. One of the main reasons is because of 14 minutes. Oh, he's left already. Chad's already left. No. Anyway, I can't help myself. But let me just give you a little short background about what we're talking about in case you weren't here. And when I entitled this The Four Seasons of a Christian, a Christian's life is... You know, anytime you use an analogy, like when Christ used the parables, you know, they break down to some degree, but it's the overall principle that's trying to be brought forth. And when we use an analogy, it's the overall principle we're talking about overall. And in this four series of Christians, I think the life of a Christian can, in a way, be sort of described as the four seasons of a year. Again, there are ups and downs and sideways, but in the long haul of it, I think this analogy makes sense. Now, there was a famous composer named Antonio Vivaldi, and he was one of the, if you've ever heard the piece, The Four Seasons, it's a very famous violin piece, and he wrote that back in the 1700s. You know, I almost knocked that off again. I did that last week. Now it's hanging on for dear life again. But anyway, it's about 40 minutes long, but it's a very interesting piece. But I want to talk a little bit, and I spent quite a bit of time last week talking about the first season, which would be the spring. So you got spring, summer, fall, winter. Now, what would I call the first stage in the life of a Christian? Again, I spent too much time really last week because I have to cut out a little bit of this week, but I call that the time of learning to wait on the kingdom. Learning to wait on the kingdom. Now, when you become a Christian, it's a time of great enthusiasm, and that's good, of course, but it's a time of wanting to convert the world, wanting everybody else to see things the way you see it, and yet God has a plan. As we know, I think it's in John 6:44, only God can call. You know, we live our life as a Christian, and we are expected to do what we can. But the calling is from God. I think we all know that. So it's a time of great enthusiasm. Now, and I went back and I covered a little bit about some of the apostles. I remember James and John, two of the apostles, and the sons of Zebedee. And there was a point where Christ was not getting treated properly in their opinion, and really he wasn't, by some of the people in the area. And James and John said, "Do you want us, Jesus, you want us to call fire down from heaven and wipe these people out?" And Jesus said, "It's not what I came here for, to wipe people out. I came here to teach the truth." Now, interestingly enough, John was the one Christian, one of the apostles, I should say, that appeared to die a natural death. He appeared to live way up into the maybe 90s, as a guess. We don't know for sure. But James, his brother James, was the first of the apostles that was martyred. Of course, Judas betrayed Christ, but James was the first one that was martyred. We could see that back in Acts 12. I'm not going to turn there, but Acts 12. So it's interesting how it works. Now, enthusiasm is a good thing. Certainly want to be enthusiastic about what we do, but it must be mixed with patience and hopefully wisdom. Now, in James 3, I think I'll turn to James 3 just for a moment. And read just a couple of verses in James 3. Letter of James. Now, this was not written by James the apostle. This was written by James, the brother of Jesus Christ. Of course, Mary had children after the virgin birth. And this James was one of them. Now, in James chapter 3, verse 1 and 2, James talks about, "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we will receive a stricter judgment." So if we're a Christian at this time, God's expecting something more than he expects of somebody that knows nothing about the Bible or Christianity. But he says, "We all stumble in many things." Everyone stumbles. If anyone doesn't stumble, he's a perfect man. Or I think the word sort of means mature, but mature, perfect. None of us are totally mature all the time. None of us are totally perfect. But during that spring of our conversion, it's an exciting time, but it's only the beginning in the life of a Christian. Again, I spent a lot of time on that point last week. Well, let's turn to the other three. So after spring comes summer. We're in summer here in the Dallas area, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now, I've got down here for summer a time of finding the strength to serve. A time of finding the strength to serve. Let's turn over to Mark, the Gospel of Mark, chapter 6. Let's just look at an example here. Because Jesus Christ, of course, the Son of God, the Word, when he was physical here, he would get tired. He would have to get rather, it'd be hard doing what he did and putting up with all the things he put up with. But in Mark, chapter 6, let's take a look at the situation here in verse 30. Now, right after, this time we're about to look at was right after Jesus sent out the 12 and the 12 apostles, and they said there were miracles taking place. God was healing through the work of the apostles, and they were preaching. Then John the Baptist was beheaded. So it was quite a time. So it was really a time that Jesus obviously reflected a lot about. John the Baptist, what a man, dying. But we drop over to verse 30. Here's the time, which I could call the springtime, finding the strength to serve. In verse 30, Mark 6, then the apostles, they gathered to Jesus and they told him all things. What? What they had done. You can go back and read some of the things that happened back before this time. So they told Jesus all the things, both what they had done and what they had taught. He taught them, sent them to teach also, did he not? And he said to them, "Come aside for yourselves to a deserted place and rest for a while." So they'd been working, and quite frankly, Jesus Christ, physically, don't you think, you know, he needed sleep? He needed rest like they did. I said, "Don't they come to this desert, let's rest for a while." For there were many people coming and going. They didn't even have time to eat, so much was going on. So they departed to a deserted place in the boat, by themselves, all time to rest. But the multitude saw them. They saw them departing, and many knew him, knew who Jesus was, and they ran on foot from all the cities, and they arrived before them and came together to him. He told them, "Let's rest for a while." And yet the multitudes, "No, we don't need you to rest. We need to hear you speak. We need to see you heal. We need all these other things that we're looking for." Jesus, when he came and he saw this great multitude of people, and he was moved with compassion for them because they were like sheep not having a shepherd. They were all over the place. Don't you think the disciples or the apostles, and don't you think, even more importantly, the Son of God, Jesus, physically was getting a little tired, could use a little break? But what did he do? He began to teach them many things. And when the day was now far spent, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place. Already the hour's late." In other words, it's time to go home. Send them away. It's time to, we need a rest. Remember spring, find the strength to serve. They said, verse 36, "Send them away." that they may go into the surrounding country and the villages and buy themselves bread or food to eat. They have nothing to eat. They're all here. They're worrying. They're doing all this stuff. We need a break. They have no food. Just send them away. Tell them to go get something to eat. But he answered. What did he say? Wouldn't it be easy to say, yeah, it's been a long day. The answer said, you give them something to eat. But there were 5,000 people, or 5,000 men, not counting women and children, it says there. But he says, you give them something to eat. And they said, well, what are we supposed to do? And this is a smart aleck comment in some degree. What are we going to do? 200 denarii worth of bread. We'd have to give them something to eat. And he said, how many loaves do you have with you? Go and see. And they found they had 5 loaves and 2 fish for 5,000 people. But he commanded them to make them all sit down in groups in the green grass. They sat down in ranks in hundreds and fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven. He blessed and broke the loaves, gave them to the disciples and set before them. And the 2 fish he divided among them all. Impossible to feed all those people. So, but they all ate. They were filled. They took up 12 baskets full of fragments of the fish. Now it says, now those who've eaten the loaves were about 5,000 men. Send them away, I'm tired. That's what the disciples were thinking. But Jesus said, don't send them away. Now, as a Christian, do you ever feel, and I think we all have, do you ever feel you just want to be left alone? You ever just want to rest and be left alone? I know a man in Rome, Georgia. He still attends. But back years ago, they had Spokesman's Club in Birmingham, Alabama. And he lived in Rome, Georgia. That's about a 2.5-hour drive. They would meet, I think, a couple times a month on a Wednesday night. Now, you know he had worked on when he had a job. But he would go drive the 2.5 miles where he could be in Spokesman's Club. And he didn't ever complain to me about it. I remember him just telling me one time he used to go to Spokesman's Club in Birmingham, and he would drive 2.5 hours just where he could be with the other men for Spokesman's Club. Think about YOU activities back. Hey, do you think many of you in here would drive hours just because where your kids could be with another group? And also, there would be men's tournaments and women tournaments, but you drive all this time, you know, to participate, to work in concession stands, just to be a part of the group. In one church area that I'm quite familiar with, years ago, there was an associate pastor, and the pastor asked him to play on the men's basketball team of one of the churches, and it was a small congregation. Today it wouldn't be considered small, but it was a small congregation then. And had to go where the tournament was on Eastern time zone, and they were in Central time zone. He told me, and they scheduled, whoever made the schedule, scheduled this church area 8 a.m. in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. He said he had to get up at 3:30. He left at 4:30. He got there just in time. And 4:30 was really 5:30 on the time zone. And he got there just in time. Now, it just so happened that this church area, this little small church, they were playing, of all teams, the best team in the region. This was a little bitty church area. And I remember I was playing for one of the, that's Nashville. And we had an A and a B team, and I was on the B team, and there was a C team. I'd probably on the C team, but we weren't playing until like 9:30. But when I remember when I got there, I remember this so clearly. And I got there, and they happened to be playing the best team, and they were certainly far from the best team, the associate pastor that I knew. And when I got there, I looked up the scoreboard. It was halftime. And I don't remember the exact score, but it was something like 50-6. And you can guess who was six. And he looked at me and said, I'll never forget this. He said, I got up at 3:30 in the morning for this. But he really wasn't upset. It was like laughing about it. Because we wanted to be a part of it. Finding the strength to serve. Because when you're a Christian, you just keep on serving as much as you can, don't you? But this send them away, I want to rest, I guess the springtime. Look at Mark 5. Let's go back a few verses to Mark 5. Now this was earlier. Verse 21, Mark 5. Do you not think Jesus ever got tired? Now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude, over and over you keep seeing this, great multitude gathered to him. He was by the sea, and behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and he begged him earnestly. What did he say? He said, my little daughter's about to die. I need you to come and heal her. So Jesus went with him. Verse 24, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him, pushing, wanted to be there. A certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years, and she had suffered many things from the physicians. She had spent all that she had, and she wasn't getting any better, she was getting worse. And she heard about Jesus, this woman. She came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. And she said, if only I can touch his clothes, I'll be made well. A lot of faith there. Immediately the fountain of blood was dried up. She was felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, you know, Son of God, turned around to the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? His disciples said, you see the multitudes throng you. Who in the world? How do we know who touched you? And she admitted it. He wasn't angry. He was glad. But being a Christian means we get tired in the summer heat. You get tired in the summer heat. Again, these four seasons, they interact and go back and forth. But in the summer season of being a Christian, you get tired of the service. You get tired of driving. You get tired of doing these things. But you keep doing it because you're a Christian, don't we? Johann Sebastian Bach, one of the great musicians of all times, he wrote hundreds, probably possibly even thousands of musical pieces. Now, he was the musician for the emperor. That would have been in Germany, I believe. Now, much of his works have been lost over the years. And you know why? One of the reasons? Because he would actually write his pieces on wrapping paper that fish and meat were wrapped in and then were put in ice to keep the fish and the meat whole. He wrote all these pieces and then he would just wrap them up oftentimes, and just put them. So a lot of it just got thrown away over the years. There's no telling what he wrote that we'll never hear. But one thing he did, though, he dedicated both his sacred music, that'd be his religious music, and his secular music. He always dedicated it to God. He always dedicated it to God. In almost all his manuscripts, the ones that were found, Bach would place two sets of initials. At the beginning, he always wrote JJ, and at the end, he always wrote SDG. Now, what does that mean? Well, JJ stood for Jesu Jivet. Probably pronounced that wrong, but it means Jesus help me. And at the end, the SDG stood for Sola Deo Gloria, which means to God be the glory. So everything he did, you know, he was a human being. I don't know how much God knew about the truth of God, but he dedicated it to God. Now, we could do worse than assign these words to our everyday life. I've said this before, I'm sure, but there was a hospital when I used to work in Chattanooga, Tennessee, one of the hospitals I called on. And one of the elevators, it was an elevator in the basement that would go up to the nursing stations, and there was a little plaque. Wasn't very big. It was smaller than the size of my Bible clothes. And says, if you thank God for life today, have you thanked God for life today? And when I would see that, really, it would make me think, have I thanked God for life today? As we have entered or will enter the summer of our Christian life, it's easy to say we're tired. Because we are, physically. It's easy to say, send them away. And we need rest. Of course we do. We need help. We need to learn to pace ourselves. This doesn't mean it's time to send them away, so to speak. It means it's time to ask God for strength to serve. To ask God for strength to serve. I remember my father. Now, when he died 13 or 14 years ago now, it's in May. And he was a strong man in many ways. And as he got older, he had all types of health problems. And it was painful to see what he had to go through. But my father always wanted to help as much. I'd always see it. He would always cut in the grass or, you know, building something. And one time when he got really pretty bad shape, there was fence they had was wind had kind of blown it over and it was kind of hanging up. And he asked my son, Stephen, and I, when we're there, if we would help him put back the fence. So Stephen was younger than me. He was probably just a late teenager this time. So, you know, I was older than that, obviously, because he's in his 30s now. But anyway, he actually, we were out there, and my father wanted to help. And my father got this hammer, and, you know, was trying to nail things up. Well, my father didn't have the strength to be nailing those nails in. It was all he could do to just tap on it. But he was out there trying. And my son called me aside and said, look, Dad, Granddaddy, he wants to help so bad that he's out there doing what he can. The summer of a Christian life is a time to not quit serving. Third season. Fall. I have down here, fall is the time to learn to accept our failures. We all fail from time to time. Now, we're not failures, don't get me wrong, but we all fail from time to time. And it's, look at Peter. Peter was so brash, he was so proud of himself. It's all the stuff, and he was all what he was going to do. Remember, he walked in water for a while. And then he failed because he lost his faith when the winds came. And Peter was the one that when Christ was arrested and crucified, Peter was the one that said, I'll never leave you. Boy, he was strong out there, wasn't he? He was out there fighting the battle. He even had a sword, tried to cut off the head of a Roman servant of one of the Romans. But Peter wasn't as strong as he liked to think he was. Of course, we know the story. He lost his nerve. He got afraid, and even to the point he denied Christ three times. And don't you think he felt like a total failure? When our life is a Christian, we often reach a certain point where we take stock where we are as a person. Hopefully, you know, we all do, hopefully, whether a Christian or not. You sit and take stock as a person. When you're young, you think you can do anything. As you get older, you sort of start taking stock. And often, this can be a time of doubt and even fear. that we're not as good as we want to think we are we? None of us are. None of us are. Often it can be a time of doubt, fear. We see how far from perfection we actually are as a person. We look back at the early years when we thought we were so strong, only to find we probably aren't nearly as strong as we'd like to be. I've seen numerous Christians at this point in their life just pack it in and say they're not cut out for being a Christian. Now, they don't really put it that way, but that's what I see happen sometimes. I've seen elders, pastors, the church, unhappy with their lot in life, just either quit, or more than often the case, leave one organization for another one, join another group, as if that group is going to solve all their problems, as if it's the group's fault, instead of the fact that we all have things to learn. Few would not admit it, or few would admit it, I guess, but I think most people eventually see maybe the grass isn't always greener on the other side. It's a matter of staying power. And oftentimes I see them try to take as many with them as they can, pursuing a better pasture, or they'll say that. Yet when reality sets in, I think they probably see that maybe it wasn't quite as easy as they thought. So we need, as Christians, we need to accept our failures and even the failures of our fellow brothers and sisters. Because none of us, we can be so hard-headed that we're not willing to admit that we all need to grow. We all need to grow. We all fall short. I know Rick Beam, a good friend of mine, he's a pastor now in Chattanooga and Rome, Georgia. He told me once, and I'm far from the great example on this, but he told me the most important thing an elder can do is to love the brethren. He said whenever someone's sick, visit them in the hospital. These days, it's hard to get in a hospital because of some of the restrictions. He said, whenever a family member of a member dies, whether they're in the church or not, try to visit the funeral home. That way they know you care. Peter so much wanted to be perfect, but then over time he saw that he was far from perfect, didn't he? Let's look at John 21. John chapter 21. Verse 15, 16, and 17. And I don't think I'll read all this here. It's just when Peter thought he had failed. Peter thought he wasn't part of the group anymore. And Christ told him three times, feed my sheep. He said, don't quit, Peter. You're not a failure. You just made some mistakes. Peter, all you have to do is read Acts, especially the first 12 chapters in Acts, much of which is talking about Peter. And the last, from chapter 28, most of it is talking about Paul. But it talks about others too. So, springtime, learning to wait on the kingdom, we covered last time. Summer, finding the strength to serve. And we got fall, being willing to accept our failures. Not that we're a failure, but accept that we are not as strong as we like to be. Number four, winter. Final point here. Spend a little time on this one. I got plenty of time here. Winter, I have this phrased as looking forward to God. Looking forward to God. So what do we mean here? What about the winter of our life? What about the winter of our life as a Christian? I saw this somewhere, not sure where. It said an old retiree, he'd retired from work, and he had some calling cards printed with his new status in life. In the center, they stated his name, Joe Banks. I just made that name up. There's nobody here named Joe or Banks, I don't think. There is. My mistake. But Joe Banks retired. It just said, Joe Banks retired. But on the four corners, up, one said, no business. Second one said, no address. Third one said, no phone. Bet you know what the fourth one said. No money. If we could live on Social Security, we're pretty good at budgeting. But it's something. So retirement's a time of adjustment, of reviewing the past and previewing the future. But does a Christian ever retire? No. Christian never retires. Sure, we try to slow down. Yet we don't quit living a life of a Christian if you're a Christian. It's just a different time in our Christian journey. Let's look over to 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4. Now here's the Apostle Paul. This is the last letter that Paul wrote. And he was in prison waiting to die. We don't know every little nook and cranny, but it appears that Paul was beheaded by Nero, but we don't know that for a fact. But we know he was waiting here to die, or so says it in the chapter here. So in 2 Timothy, I've got chapter 4. Yeah, let's just go to 4. Look at verse 1. Again, this is in the winter of his life, the end of his physical life and a life as a Christian. I charge you, therefore. He's talking to Timothy. I charge you, therefore, before God and the Lord Jesus Christ. So he's charging Timothy before the Father and the Son, who will judge the living and the dead at his appearing in his kingdom. God sees everything we do. He knows we're not perfect. But maybe we should admit it. Maybe we should cut each other a little slack. All of us, and I'm talking to myself, but we have to have some type of, we just have to work together. The better we do, the better our congregation will go, and the better our lives will go. He told Timothy to preach the word. Be ready in season and be ready out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering. Yeah, you have to put up with it. You know, we don't always get our way. It would be wrong for me to always get my way. If I always got my way, well, you wouldn't learn anything. But none of us need to always get our way. We're all a team. We need to work together. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. And I think that time in this world is happening more all the time. But according to their own desires, they have itching ears. They'll heap up for themselves teachers. They'll get their own teachers that will teach them whatever they want to hear, even if it's not right. And they'll turn their ears away from the truth. There's where the problem is. And they will be turned aside to fables, things that aren't true, according to the Bible. He said, Timothy, you need to be watchful. Do the work of an evangelist. Fulfill your ministry, Timothy. Now, Paul, after saying that in verse 7 and 8, these are basically some of the last words Paul wrote. He said, I fought the good fight. Paul knew he wasn't perfect. Paul had seen, we can see examples. Look at Romans 7 where Paul says, oh, wretched man that I am. Because Paul knew without the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, he was nothing. That's not Protestant. I grew up in a Protestant church. There's no way on this good earth I would ever go back to being a Protestant. Now, I'm not against them. I remember my Uncle Carl. He was a Baptist minister. And I don't remember a lot when I was a kid about Uncle Carl. But Uncle Carl went to Belmont University, and he was on the college basketball team. And he was studying to be, I think the seminary studying to be a Baptist minister. And he was, I don't know if he was a starter or where he was on the team, but he was supposed to take a weekend off during the basketball season to go on a church retreat to work toward his goal of being a Baptist minister. And his coach, his basketball coach, said, "Carl Martin, if you go on that retreat instead of staying here and playing on the team, you're not going to play another minute the rest of the season." So my Uncle Carl said, "Well, I've got to go." So he went anyway. He'd never played another minute. His coach didn't let him play. And I still remember my father taking me to one of the basketball games after Uncle Carl had been, shall we say, put on hiatus on the end of the bench. He's still dressed out. And I remember after the game going down there, and I was so impressed because he had on his basketball uniform, but there's no perspiration because Uncle Carl didn't get to play again. He never once complained to me about that when I was growing up, but I heard it through some of my relatives. So, you know, he was a Protestant minister. He didn't know a lot of things that maybe someday he will. But yet he stood up for what he believed there. And Paul said, "I fought the good fight. I finished the race. I've kept the faith." That's the main thing. Paul said, "I never left the faith." Finally. Don't you know he's thinking, "Oh man, finally. There's laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, is going to give me on that day." What day? The resurrection. "And not only to me, but also to all those who love his appearing. Be diligent. Come to me quickly, Timothy." Because then he tells him about how some of these, certainly Demas, had just forsaken him and turned away. Can you imagine the Apostle Paul ever retiring? No, he never entered his mind. Never entered his mind. I can think of so many examples of older Christians who knew their time on life was growing short, and the lessons that I can say I got to learn from them. You're not always, and I'm not always going to be young and healthy. When I said I'm not always going to be young and healthy, I passed that point a long time ago. I'm in winter. I hope winter lasts a while, but and a lot of you are. I remember this lady in Middle Tennessee that was, she never married, or she and her sister lived together for years. They're both attended church. Her sister died, and then this lady, she wasn't in good health. She lived at 11 Tennessee. She lived in a trailer, and she had a little bitty deck outside her trailer. It wasn't much bigger than this podium. Well, it was a little bit bigger, but you know, it was a little bit better than, she had steps to go down outside. Had a railing, of course. And she told me one time when I was over there, she said, "You know what? I like to go outside at night and just look up at the moon." And she said, "I say, God, you made that big old moon. Wow, you're quite a God." She wasn't worried about a lot of things that we may worry about. She didn't have a lot, but she appreciated what she had. It also made me think about her brother. Came to my mind here. Her brother's name was Ralph. Not Ralph Metz, but her mother's name was Ralph. Just a very famous name. A lot of famous Ralphs in the world. But this Ralph, he was in terrible health. And he actually, he had numerous ailments, but later in life, he was very bloated in his stomach, and he'd have to go to the hospital to have this jaundice drained off his liver because his liver was just deteriorating. And it would produce quite a lot of liquids, and quite frankly, he knew he was dying. He kept attending church as long as he could, but then he had to quit attending because of his health. And I remember one Sunday morning, I had a message. I must have been doing something when he called, but I had a voicemail, and it was Ralph asking me if I would come to anoint him. And he lived in a trailer also. It was probably a little over an hour drive, maybe not, probably right around an hour drive. So I didn't get the message, but so I called Fred Keller's, and Fred Keller's wasn't there, but his wife answered and said, yeah, Fred got a call after I did, and Fred was going out there. So thankfully, for me, in my opinion, I went out there too. So when I got out there, Fred Keller's and I got there about the same time, and we just sat and talked to Ralph for probably an hour about all types of things. He was telling us about this, telling us about that. And then at the end of the conversation, he asked if we would pray for him, which we did. And when we're about to leave, Ralph said to me, to Fred Keller's, you can go, but would you mind? I need to have a talk with Mr. Martin. I thought, what have I done now? What have I done this time? And Ralph said, there's something that's been bothering me for so long, I've got to talk to you about it. And I said, well, what, Ralph? And he said, I'll never forget. He said, I've been calling you Stan instead of Mr. Martin. And I feel awful about that. I said, Ralph, that's my name. You don't have to call me Mr. Martin. It was nice. You know, I guess he was thinking nicely, but I said, you don't have to do that. And we had a nice talk, and we hugged each other, and I left. And when I was going out to my car, Fred Kellers was kind of hiding around the corner. He said, what did he ask you? I said, he just said he should have been calling me Mr. Martin instead of Stan. No big deal. We kind of had a laugh about it. Well, Ralph died in less than a week. And I thought, and Fred Kellers and I got to do the funeral. What if I hadn't have driven out there and it could have easily happened? I wouldn't have had the opportunity to hear and talk about things. I wouldn't have the opportunity to have him tell me how he felt bad that he wasn't, because it was bothering him. It shouldn't have, but it was bothering him. In the winter of our Christian life, for those that are worried, I'm about finished. In the winter of our Christian life, it's time we're looking forward to God. We're looking forward to the kingdom, probably more so than ever. Remember the Apostle John, the apostle that evidently did not die in a martyr's death, died probably of old age. Remember, he wrote the book of Revelation. He was on the Isle of Patmos. He probably thought his career was over. When all his friends, all the other apostles were dying out, dead, yet God still had time. God still had time for John. When I was a young boy, I used to go fishing with my grandparents. And I think my grandfather died, I think I was 12 or 13 years old. My grandmother lived quite a bit longer. She didn't die. She was about 93. But anyway, boy, I remember how much fun I had going fishing with my grandparents. And after my grandparents died, I've hardly ever gone fishing again since, because they would take me and help me. Well, I still look back at that time as some of the more enjoyable times of my life, just spending time with my grandparents. We're aging and older. So let me, I know it by heart, but let me say the four stages of a Christian. Now, we kind of go in and out of stages. We know that. But this is sort of an overall approach. Spring, learning to wait on the kingdom. Summer, finding the strength to serve. Fall, being willing to accept our failures. In the winter, looking forward to God. In the end, this is what a Christian has to say. I wrote this down. My thoughts. A boy and an old man were sitting on a dock in late afternoon fishing. They talked about many things, why sunsets are red, why the rain falls, you know, all these deep things that we'll never get the answer in this life. Why the seasons change, what life is like. Finally, the boy looked up at the old man as the old man was baiting his hook for him, which is what my grandparents used to do. They would always put the worms on the fishing line for me. They'd always take the fish off at when I caught something. Finally, he said to this, you know, this older man, "Does anyone ever see God?" The old man looked across the water, the blue waters, the beautiful scenery. And he said, "Son, it's getting so I can hardly see anything else." The life of a Christian is not just one straight line. We have our ups, we have our downs, we have our joys, we have our sorrows. But God will return for the Christians.